Retro.
Go.
Fido.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance, go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in the space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
And greetings to all my fellow spacers listening along Florida's Space Coast, and to those of you who are hearing our streaming audio at WMMBAM.com. I am Jim Behnke. This is the February 20th, 2010 edition of Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Well, if you're tuning in for the first time today, we certainly do welcome you to this show, which is all about our nation's space program. And let me tell you, this sure is an unprecedented time for NASA and our civilian space program. With the president's budget announcement about 3 weeks old, emotions are continuing to run high. And I think there's still a lot to be excited about and still a lot to be concerned about. And I think there are indeed more questions than answers right now as we wait to see what Congress does to respond to the president's budget announcement and the policy direction that pointed us toward. What are your questions about space today and where NASA is heading? What are your suggestions for the future of our space program? I would love to hear from you and to talk about it. And you know, I've heard and I read in the Florida Today responses to some of the stories the guys do in the space team. People who actually live along Florida's space coast who think the space exploration program is a complete waste of money, complete waste of time. I'd sure love to talk to you and try to understand as objectively and unemotionally as possible what in the world you're thinking about. And if you're willing to give us a chat, give us a call and chat about it, we'd love to hear from you. Anyone and everyone, welcome to call 768-1240 at any time. Let us know what you're thinking. If you're listening to us on streaming audio at WMMBAM.com, you can certainly call us from anywhere in the nation. The area code 321, so the number 321-768-1240. Or send me an email if you prefer, and we keep an eye on the screen at all times. Send the email to spacetalking@AOL.com. Quick teaser that we're going to let you know that today we're going to recognize the 48th anniversary of the first American reaching in orbit to Earth orbit, John Glenn, 48 years ago today. And we're going to spend some time in the second half of our program talking about the future of the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. And no matter what happens out at the Cape here in the next few years, that place is going to stay open and be important to our telling the story of space, and certainly important to our local economy. So we'll be talking to Bill Moore from the Visitor Complex in the second half of the show. In the meantime, let me quick update you on the current space shuttle mission. Endeavour is still in orbit. It undocked from the International Space Station last night at 7:54 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It had spent 9 days, 19 hours, and 48 minutes joined to the outpost. Tranquility, the node number 3, was attached to the station. And after 3 spacewalks, is all wired up and configured and ready to support up there. Space station now, NASA says about 98% complete with 4 more shuttle missions to go. Those missions will tend to be supply missions and outfitting missions in terms of stuff they're still going to attach to the outside, some spare parts and whatnot inside the supplies. But I think if you take a look at the space station right now, the latest pictures, that's pretty much the final look of the station. I don't think anything more that they're going to add is going to really change the big picture look of that space station. And again, what a remarkable facility that is to see in orbit and certainly to watch in our skies as it comes over from time to time. The focus now, of course, is to bring Endeavour down safely home. The crew went through its usual routine of inspections of the heat shield. And they're going to wake up here in about another hour for their day of pre-landing tests. They hope to land here tomorrow night about 10:16 on Sunday night. The backup time, 11:51 Eastern time. The early outlook for the weather is not ideal, however. They may keep it up a day and try again on Monday night, either at here or in California or even in New Mexico at White Sands. As of last night, the weather forecasts for Monday were not favorable at any of the landing sites. So it's going to be a dynamic situation this weekend, as they like to say, and we're going to wait and see what happens. In the meantime, by the way, a quick update on Discovery's next flight. Because of the cold here, there was some delays in getting Discovery rolled over to its processing hangar. That has caused a domino effect, and now they're looking at launching April 5th as the next space shuttle launch, bumped from March. That puts the next launch from the Cape targeted for March 2nd. United Launch Alliance Delta IV is to fly with the GOES-P weather satellite. And we still hope to see SpaceX get their Falcon 9 off the ground by the end of the March time frame. They've got the range booked, I believe, for March 22nd. Brand new company, brand new rocket here at the Cape. Could expect that date not to hold tight to that March 22nd. But we certainly hope that that the last-minute issues are simple to solve. And we see that rocket get off the ground pretty quick. I want to welcome in right away, before we get to our break, Michael from Palm Bay has a question about the space shuttle. Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for your time. I really appreciate your show.
Yeah, what's up?
Hey, what's up is this space shuttle. Now, this space shuttle is going to be discontinued in like four more launches.
Right.
What are we supposed to do? Rely on the Russians? Yeah, well, that's a really good idea. You know, who really, you know, we're going to have a new Congress coming in here, and we may get some more funding for some more space shots. But we can't rely on the Russians or somebody else to get our guys up there. And a space shuttle is more important than just the
Oh, okay.
It's more about servicing Hubble, the Webb system coming in, which will be the observatory. And I'll just say I'm totally outraged having to live in Palm Bay, this place here, Brevard, and have all these jobs lost. We need this not only for the economy, we need it for the country. It's a national security issue, and that's my point.
Well, good, Michael. Thanks for that. Let me direct some of your thoughts. First of all, you know, of course, we knew the shuttle was going away 6 years ago, and I think we do need to get rid of the shuttle at some point. I think the shuttle is it's time to move on. But the point you bring about, you know, can we rely on the Russians? I think we can rely on them. Should we? No. We should have our own capability to get our own people into space. And in having the capability to get humans back and forth, not also lose the capability that the shuttle had, which was to carry large cargo into orbit. Now, yes, the Atlas V, the Delta IV can carry large cargo into orbit. But when we lose the shuttle, we'll have nothing to carry large hardware back to the Earth. And that's a key thing, too. We don't have the ability to bring large modules of supplies up to the space station and bring, you know, trash and whatnot back. At the same time, you mentioned the servicing of Hubble. That's a very important part of our ability to work and live in space. And we have to be able to continue to do that, to have that capability. Slight correction and letting you know about the James Webb telescope. That is not a serviceable telescope. It's going into a very far out orbit that we can't reach. But in any case, we need that capability, and we shouldn't have to rely on the Russians. I agree with that. I don't think the Russians are necessarily bad. I don't think this is a case where, you know, it's the old big bad communist Soviet Union anymore. But I do think that we need to be able to have our own capability. As we work with the Russians to continue to do that, we've got to make sure they don't hold us hostage. They've already raised the prices of their seats on their Soyuz. They've talked about raising them even more as time goes on. So we need to be careful about all that. We need to watch out for that. And I think Constellation and canceling Constellation, the mistake there being that we don't have the vision to keep going out and doing the next thing. And I think we can have that vision. I think it can still be called Constellation. Now, what kind of rockets do you use? I don't know. We'll have to get there, and we'll have to wait and see. Look, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back here in just a minute, we're going to celebrate 48 years of John Glenn's first flight into space, first American into orbit. When we come back, this is Space Talk. I'm Jim Behnke, and you're listening to WMMB.
Mm-hmm. With everything you need to know about America's space program, here is Jim Behnke.
And welcome back to Space Talk, brought to you by United Space Alliance. 321-768-1240, the number to call to join me today with your questions or comments. Always, we'll take your email questions and comments at spacetalking@aol.com. Well, today, February 20th, 2010, it was February 20th, 1962, 48 years ago today, I was 2 days shy of being 3 months old. You can do the math. I had missed the suborbital flights of Alan Shepard and Gus Grissom, although I certainly consider myself alive for them, just not yet born, kind of on my own little suborbital journey right then. Sometimes I like to think that history was basically saying, okay, you know, Jim Behnke's born, so now go ahead, America, and start flying into orbit. At least I like to believe that. But the most important thing, of course, about the John Glenn anniversary is the fact that my wife was born the day after Glenn's Mercury mission, her birthday tomorrow. I believe that this was God's way of helping me as the husband never to forget that her birthday is February 21st. I always will remember it as the day after John Glenn flew on the Mercury mission. The shuttle mission years later kind of confused me a little bit, but it's okay. I put that out of my head, keep it straight on the Mercury mission. Let's see. You know, Glenn was first into orbit. That's the key trivia point here, you know, and a lot of people forget that. You know, it's Alan Shepard was the first American to fly in space, May of 1961. Gus Grissom followed in July with a suborbital hop. Of course, the Russian cosmonaut Yuri Gagarin flew in April of 61 and went into orbit. And by the time our two guys had made their suborbital flights, then in August of 61, Garmin Titov, the cosmonaut, flew in space in orbit. And not only went into orbit for a single orbit, it actually went into orbit for a whole day. And at this point, as the history books recall, NASA said, okay, it's time to scrap the Redstone and the suborbital flights, get one of our guys into orbit and get him into orbit now. And, of course, they turned to John Glenn to do that. And after a lot of delays in the launch, a lot of delays in getting things started, they were finally able to get John off the ground. And what I want to do for you, just to be a little nostalgic, is to play a couple of some sound files of his from his flight, and just kind of be a little nostalgic and listen. And so here's the countdown. Here's the countdown to launch just before they lifted off.
Godspeed, John Glenn.
Of course, that was 10, Carpenter.
9, 8, 7.
And of course, the liftoff. And of course, as we learned later, you know, during the shuttle mission, it was. Glenn never heard the Godspeed John Glenn thing. That was not on the loop that he heard. Well, let's listen for a while here now. This is what we heard along the Space Coast as Glenn lifted off and climbed out into the atmosphere. Kind of fun to hear all the standard calls still.
101 amps, 2-4.
Talking about all the cabin pressure issues and whatnot.
We're smoothing out some now, getting out of the vibration area.
Roger, you're through Max Q, flight badges.
Roger, feels good through Max Q and smoothing out real fine.
Max Q, we talk about on the shuttle all the time still. Point where they're at maximum
pressure okay,
on the vehicle.
Now.
It's interesting here, he's going to mention 6 Gs.
Sky looking very dark outside.
Shuttle never gets
cabin
up.
Pressure is holding at 6-1, okay.
Roger, cabin pressure holding at 6-1.
Coming up on 2 minutes. And fuel is 102, 101, oxygen 78, 102. G's are building to 6.
G's are at 6. You know, Shuttle never got up to 3. Tougher ride there.
1.25, the tower fired. I could not see the tower go. I saw the smoke go by the window.
Yeah, we confirm staging on TM.
Roger.
You know,
still have about 1.5 G's.
This was all new.
Programming over.
We had never heard this before from an astronaut describing this kind of a thing. I mean, it was just
there the tower went right
amazing.
There. Have the tower in sight, way out. Could see the tower go.
He's talking about the escape rocket
tower. Cabin tower is green.
and it takes off with its one little solid motor.
Flight path looks good. Steering is good.
Roger. Understand everything looks good. He's starting to build again a little bit.
Now we've got escape motors planned for the future. They're more powerful than the Atlas rocket was at the beginning.
Roger, Bermuda, stand by. This is Friendship 7, fuel 103, 101, oxygen 78, 100. All voltages above 2.5, amps 2.6.
And so on, all the way up into orbit, and it was just absolutely amazing. Of course, when he finally got up there, I think it was one of the most famous lines that he said.
Seco.
And here comes.
Plaza grades fired. Okay.
Adjusted.
Roger, 0G, and I feel fine. Capsule is turning around. Oh, that view is tremendous.
Roger, turn has started.
Roger, capsule turning around, and I could see the booster during turnaround just a couple of hundred yards behind me. It was beautiful.
Roger, 7, you have a go, at least 7 orbits.
Roger, understand go for at least 7 orbits.
And, of course, you know, he only made it for 3 orbits because of some issues we'll talk about in a second. But, you know, again, 0G and I feel fine. You know, we did not know then what was going to happen to an astronaut when he hit zero gravity. It's just amazing what little we knew. There were still concerns that even at that point when he hit 0G, that they were going, his eyes would not work or his hearing wouldn't work or something screwy would happen and he'd have to come back in an emergency. And, of course, while he was up there, he gets to see the sights and whatnot. And one of the sights he saw, he's talking to Gordo Cooper over Australia.
We're doing real fine up here. Everything is going very well. Over.
Any symptoms of vertigo or nausea at all? Over.
Negative. No symptoms whatsoever. I feel fine. Over.
No.
Just to my right, I can see a big pattern of lights. Apparently, right on the coast. I can see the outline of a town and a very bright light just to the south of it. On down.
And Rockingham, you're saying there.
Roger. The lights show up very well. And thank everybody for turning them on, will you?
Sure will, John.
Of course, they didn't have a TDRS system like the shuttle does where Mission Control could stay in contact at all times. They had to wait till they were flying over different ground stations, and so the different astronauts went. That was Gordon Cooper in Australia. And as he continues to fly around, you know, and then there was time for all the good-natured stuff, a time when you know, he was able to make some jokes and whatnot, and here was one of them he noted after he hit 4 hours of flight time.
This is Friendship 7. In 45 more seconds, I'd like to have you send a message for me, please. Over. I want you to send a message to the director or to the commandant, U.S. Marine Corps in Washington. Tell him I have my 4 hours required flight time in for the month and request flight jet be established for me. Over.
And that was an ongoing gag then at that point. When the astronauts hit their flight time, hey, they were in orbit. They're flying. And they're military guys earning military salary. And so it was absolutely time to make sure that they get the money that they had coming to them. Well, it was time to come home. And, of course, then they joked, well, we better hope that he's not coming back to Hawaii. He better start be coming back right down to Earth. And the concern during the landing, of course, was this the signal that said the Mercury capsule's landing bag had deployed. And the landing bag is between the heat shield and the capsule. And the concern was that if it did deploy, he wouldn't make it down. So they told him to leave his retro pack in place to try to hold the heat shield in place to keep the landing bag from being deployed. And on the way down, once they regained communication after the reentry blackout, there was a lot of jubilation about what it was like to have that experience and to follow him all the way down. And so here's the last little bit of the flight.
7, this is Tip. What's your general condition? You feeling pretty well?
My condition is good, but that was a real fireball, boy. I had great chunks of that retro pack breaking off all the way through.
7, this is Tate. The view is you will be within 1 mile of the upland destroyer. Recovery weather is very good. Over.
Roger. Understand. Friendship 7 going to drogue early. It's Walking first, stroke came out. Stroke is out. Roger, stroke came out at 30,000 in about a 90-degree yaw.
The first parachute.
Roger, is the stroke holding on?
Roger, stroke looks good.
That stabilizes him.
Roger, re-entry checklist complete. Standing by for main at 10.
He's waiting for the main parachute.
Coming down on 10, snorkels are open. Main chute is on green, chute is out, in reef condition at 10,800 feet, and beautiful chute. Chute looks good. On O2 emergency, and the chute looks very good.
And, of course, from there, then he drifts down and hits the water and splashes down and enters the history books, and you could hear the jubilation when that main chute came out, because although there were still a few steps left, boy, when that chute came out, it was like, you know, the flight is done, and we're safe, and we're on our way home, and everything's going to work out great. And so John Glenn, 48 years ago, first American in orbit, and it's a time that I don't think will ever be repeated. But we can relive that time out at the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. We're going to talk to Bill Moore about that in just a minute. Take our five-minute break here. Space Talk brought to you by the United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Behnke, and you're listening to WMMB.
And now back to Space Talk on WMMB.
And welcome back to this second half of Space Talk on WMMB, brought to you by United Space Alliance. Innovation you can trust, performance you can count on. Once again, 321-768-1240, the number to call to get into the studio. If you're a local AT&T wireless customer here on the Space Coast, just punch in *1240, and you'll be taken directly into the studio. Send us email at spacetalking@AOL.com, and we can see that right away and get your question or comment on the air. And throughout the week, be sure and follow us on Twitter at spacetalking. Today's program can also be heard live online all the time on the WMMB website. And also invite you to download a recording of today's program throughout this week, again, at WMMBAM.com. Check out our show webpage there as well by hitting keywords Space Talk. So a lot of ways to keep in touch with us during the week, and send us your thoughts and comments, and we can massage those, put them on the air, and have a lot of fun. And maybe get some business done. Speaking of getting some business done, well, there's a place up here in Brevard County on the north end, east or just west of the Kennedy Space Center, and it is called, coincidentally, the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. And I'm telling you, as a space cadet, that is the best place in the whole world to go. I mean, it beats Disney, it beats Universal, it beats just about anywhere else that I think I've ever been or would like to be or would like to go. Maybe short of Earth orbit itself. I have so many memories of this place. As a kid on vacation coming down from Minnesota, my first year of college, spending my birthday there, the best tasting cheeseburger, French fries, and a Krispy Kreme coconut pie. I don't even know if Krispy Kreme makes coconut pies anymore. If they do, someone, please get a hold of me. Tell me where I can find them. It's a place where I swear when I retire, I want to be a bus driver out there. That's my goal, is to get to the point where I can be a bus driver out there and take people around and show them this incredible place. And the company that runs this place for NASA is Delaware North Companies Parks and Resorts Incorporated. Bill Moore is the number one guy in charge for Delaware North here at the Visitor Complex. This past week, NASA re-awarded them the contract for as the concessionaire for running the Visitor Complex for another 10 years. They've been doing it for 10 years and done an outstanding job. And I want to have Bill Moore on the show here today and talk about this wonderful place and what their plans are. And again, we welcome Bill Moore to Space Talk. Bill, welcome and congratulations on the big win.
Hey, Jim, thanks very much. I appreciate that. And what a great introduction. Those were great remarks and spoken by somebody who really knows their way around.
Well, appreciate that. And, of course, it is a favorite place. And your predecessors have done a great job, and you've done a great job since coming on board. You've won the contract. Give us a flavor, if you can. Give us a tease. What are Delaware North's plans for this place for the next 10 years?
Well, you know, it's an exciting time, Jim. There are a lot of things going on in NASA, of course, and our real mission is to tell that story. Not everybody gets to get up close, and certainly as you said earlier, it's very, very few of us get to go in low Earth orbit. So for us, our job is to make that connection emotionally and through the hardware and show what these great folks do. And we're excited to do that for another 10 years and hopefully 20 years, the way the new contract is laid out. We obviously have done a lot over the last 15 years. The Delaware North has been operating the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex, and we have exciting plans to sort of replicate, if not grow, the place, the complex much more for the next 10 to 20 years.
Yeah, and you know, I've heard different ideas discussed, and I've had my own ideas. Of course, you know, we've talked about things like I've seen talk of, for example, putting a dome over the Rocket Garden. We've heard talk about, and not necessarily from you or any of your people, but we've heard people talking in the community, wouldn't it be great to have a golf course out there, a resort center out there, more hotels, something like that, where you really kind of build up a tourist area out there. Have you had any of that on your radar at all? Are you able to talk about any of that?
Well, there are a couple of big things that we have been very public that we are focused on, and I think there's no secret, first of all, that we want to get a space-flown orbiter to be permanently displayed at Kennedy.
Yeah.
You know, every launch of the orbiters have certainly left from the Kennedy Space Center, and it only seems right that they should come back there and, in one way, showcase what the great people of Kennedy and around the country have done to get these orbiters in the air for these many years. But so few of us have had the chance to look up close for an orbiter and see what a just a magnificent machine it is and how complex it is. It's a fascinating vehicle. I know the few folks that have seen them close, it sort of changes your experience. It changes how you think about space, and we want to do that. One of the very first things, this is last year those orbiters are going to fly, and we would love to have one towed down the runway just a little bit further.
That's right.
And display it over at Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex.
Well, you know, you're so right about that up-close-and-personal aspect of the whole thing. You know, I mean, you know, I've preached for years that, you know, the best way to get support for the program is just to show them a launch. I mean, there's not a person I've never met who hasn't seen their first launch that with a person on board, a man launch, that, you know, didn't have a tear in their eye, that didn't just wasn't so moved by the whole thing. And when you put someone up next to an orbiter, you know, and this was my impression and an impression of folks I've had a chance to host out there. You know, you think about the orbiter as this smooth model, aluminum, plastic-type thing, you know, and when you get up close to the thing, you realize almost how furry it is, fuzzy it is. It's got a soft texture because of the blankets and the tiles, and suddenly it takes on this whole different kind of personality that you just don't see unless you're right underneath the thing. And that's the experience, I think, that we need to get people to, and if we can get the orbiter here, and I'm pretty confident, Bill, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty confident that of the three that are out there for grabs, we're gonna get one.
Well, we feel real confident as well, Jim. It's a lot of work to do. NASA has asked museums and locations around the country to submit paperwork to request one. We've done that. We've done it twice now. For there was a second round.
Right.
Certainly, one's going to go to the Smithsonian, which we know about, and probably going to be Discovery. But of the two vehicles that are left, we certainly would like to have one there and display that possibly at a. In its native environment and an orbital processing facility originally, and then move it into a domed, enclosed building, which will properly highlight it, as you said, when you get up close to it. It really does alter your perception of these vehicles. They almost are breathing alive when you're just right up there next to them, and then, of course, the tiles, which get talked about endlessly,
right.
when you get up under and around the nose of it and the wing, and you realize how many of them there are and how much it takes to get it ready for every flight. It is a real tribute that of course, we have one coming home tomorrow night, and we look forward to partnering with NASA on the last four launches that are upcoming, and then we'll have to see where Congress and the administration and NASA end up going. The second thing we want to do, Jim, and there's been, again, some public discourse about this. It was in the request for proposals that NASA put out, was to take the Astronaut Hall of Fame and integrate it into a different facility.
Okay.
On the main complex. A couple of reasons for that. One is obviously the Hall of Fame has been very, very popular. The Astronaut Scholarship Foundation, the work that they've done, Len LeBlanc's done a great job with that organization. They're coming up on induction here in June. And
right.
So we need more space. It's, you know, we're fortunate that the Hall of Fame has needs more room to expand. And so moving it to main complex would allow us to do that. Then we could take the facility and that we're where the Hall of Fame is today and provide some additional education opportunities, which are also a focus not only of Administrator Bolden. As you're starting to hear that more and more through NASA, that we want to make sure we're getting that education message out, and NASA has a real interest and a responsibility to do that, and we want to partner with that as well.
And how are we doing on the audience? You know, give us a flavor of the kind of people and where they're coming from.
Well, the audience is starting to change, Jim, and that's a great question. You know, 2009 was just a really tough year in the hospitality business. I don't care where you were, you know, where you were a hotel or a resort, or it was a challenging year. We had a really good year. We didn't grow our business as much as we might normally, but we didn't fall off very much at all, almost a sort of flat, if you will. So we were pretty happy with that. We had a great, terrific Christmas season. But one of the things we're starting to see, and we've always had a great international visitation, but that's really, you know, starting to come back a little bit as the economy grows. That's very positive to see. Sometimes I think those of us that live in the United States, we have so many opportunities to see so many things that maybe we don't focus as much on space as maybe we did in the 60s and 70s. I think that'll change, but I think we see a tremendous interest from the international audiences, not only European but Asian and as well as South American.
Yeah.
We're also seeing the shift in age. I mean, for a long, long time, space, let's face it, was a predominantly sort of male experience, and you know, guys and big engines and all the stories that go with it. In some cases, are fairly true demographically, but we're seeing a lot of women. We're seeing a lot of families come involved. We're seeing a lot of young kids come involved. Brevard Space Week was a huge success this year when we invite all the, I think, sixth grade kids that is from Brevard County to come out. And this was my first time to go through that. And, boy, they are wound up and enthusiastic, and they get the message. So we want to shift for those audiences and have more things that are appealing to a wider demographic, if you will. And we also want to communicate with them different. The old days of the signs and tours are
yes.
still there, but how many people do you know that don't have iPhones and applications?
Right.
We have to get in the middle of all those kind of high-tech gadgets and add those to the experience as well.
Yeah, that's right. Well, let's just hold that thought just for a second, Bill, as we're going to come up here on a break. And when we come back with Bill Moore after this final break, we'll talk some more about the visitor complex and where it's headed and ask a little bit about some of those ways to interact and get people more interested in what's going on and maybe even some follow-up things that we can be doing. But in the meantime, I want to remind you that there's still time for you to give us a call, 768-1240, the number to call to get into the studio here to ask us a question. Bill Moore will be with us for a few more minutes. And again, throughout the week, we want to remind you that you can get to us at WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, and see the Space Talk page. Well, I'm Jim Benke. This is Space Talk. You're listening to WMMB. We'll be back for our final segment in just a moment.
This is Space Talk with Jim Benke.
And welcome back as we begin our final segment. Again, today is Space Talk, sponsored by United Space Alliance. Our guest on the line, Bill Moore from Delaware North Companies Parks and Resorts, Inc., the concessionaire that runs the KSC Visitor Complex. And, Bill, we do have a question that came online during the break from Lisa from Rockledge. And I guess I don't know if it's a tough question, but she does want to. She's basically making the point that it's expensive. She says that it's expensive to get to the visitor complex. You know, why is it that you can charge, you know, to get onto a government taxpayer funded thing? And when will the next free day be for Brevard County? I guess she's upset that she has to pay. She wants a free day.
Sure. Don't we all like those? Well, first thing, let's clear something up for Lisa and for everybody else. And this is sort of one we continue to work on the education side. Not a single taxpayer dollar goes into running the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex. I think because we're next to NASA, which is obviously a government facility, that it's sort of common belief that the government funds us, but we don't. We actually partner with NASA, and we use the funds from folks like Lisa when they come out and visit, and we take those front gate revenues and the revenues from food and the retail to essentially invest back into the visitor center. And we will have a Brevard-free weekend again. I had my first one last fall and had a great time, and we had lots of people come out from Brevard County, and it's a great tradition and certainly one we're going to keep doing. But we work real hard to keep the entrance fees and the cost for food and retail moderately priced. For example, compared to all of our friends out to the Central Florida area, we don't have a parking admission at all.
Right.
And we don't charge for strollers and wheelchairs and all the little stuff that sort of adds up. And next thing you know, you've invested a lot of money before you ever got on the front door. So really, we appreciate the support of not only folks from the local area in Brevard County, but we appreciate folks from around the world who come in because as our attendance grows, that obviously increases our investment ability to put back into the product. So we don't really use NASA funds. We use self-generated funds, and those funds build places like the Saturn V. They'll help us acquire an orbiter, and they'll help us acquire the resources to build a new place for the Hall of Fame. So
right.
It's a self-sustaining business, and it works pretty good that way.
Well, and let me answer that question in my way, Bill. And I do remember when the gated admission went up for the first time, and the screams that came from what I guess I'll call the old-timers, you know, that used to be free and it should be free and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, the place was stale. I'm sorry, but the place was stale. It was getting stale. It wasn't doing anything. And you need money to do the exhibits, to do the kind of upgrades. You need to tell the story better, to do a better job of reaching people. And, in fact, when you put the gate up and you started charging admission, there was more money to do those upgrades. And, in fact, it actually made the place more popular and attendance grew by virtue of the fact that you were charging for it. And you know, now you're following the winds of the economy in general, but I got to believe that you're still more popular than ever because you have that money to be able to reinvest into the place and do those new things that that keep bringing people back. And frankly, there is a lot to do out there. If you were to go out there and actually read every word and experience every show and take all the tours and really soak it all up, you can't do it in a day anymore. You can't.
Right. You really can't, Jim. And, I've had a lot of friends of mine since I moved down here and very, of course, without saying, very happy to be here and privileged of running this wonderful complex. But the old joke goes that I tell them, well, go out in the park at, 9 or 10, and why don't you call me? And they say, well, we'll be done in a couple of hours. I say, well, call me when you're ready to go home,
yeah, right.
And I'll meet you for dinner or lunch or whatever. And they always call about 6 or 6:30. They're dead tired. And their first comments are, we didn't see everything. And it
right.
is tough to see. We have a space for an astronaut out there every day. We do programs like Dine with an Astronaut. We do astronaut encounters. So there's always some interactivity that takes place. We're working on a new exhibit that we're tweaking a little bit that tells the future of space a little bit with NASA called Exploration Space.
Mm-hmm.
It's interactive. It's got some new exhibits in it. We haven't really gone full stream with it yet, but it's doing some trial runs, and that's going on very, very well. And then, like we talked about earlier, we have a great new capital program that we're working with NASA under the new contract and hope to really take it up several notches above where it is today.
Well, and I don't know if he's listening, but I do want to take a moment to publicly say to you, thanks for having John McBride on your staff. I think he's doing an outstanding job. It's great to have that kind of experience, that kind of a flown astronaut, that kind of a caliber of a man working for you and doing those things, because I think it's adding to the whole program, and I think that's a great, great investment that you made in him.
Yeah, thanks very much. John's been a terrific attribute. He really has. I mean, it's a godsend for me because he translates NASA for me every day. But he's also, as you know, when you take an astronaut to a meeting, there's not a greater, better icebreaker in the world
right.
to get who you need to talk to is than John. And he's not only passionate about NASA, he's passionate about education. He loves this part of Florida. He does a lot for the community. And he's been a great resource, and we have a great team of people. John's just one of them, but
right.
All Absolutely. The way through a group, we're excited and really geared up and ready for this new challenge that NASA's given us.
Well, let me ask you the last question, and then we'll let you go. And this is, if you were here, you'd roll your eyes at me and say, "Not this again." But I'm going to ask it anyway. Someday, can we get my vision for the launch stadium out there? You know,
well,
the big circular stadium
Jim,
that points in different directions.
I know you're always kidding me about that one, but let's just say that idea has not been lost on us. How about that? I'm going to tease you a little bit with that one.
And,
we work, If we work through these plans, I think you'll be pleased. How about that?
Will it rotate depending on which launch pad it's pointed
well,
at?
Well, we haven't quite got that part figured
okay.
out, but we do think there's we do some portable stuff when we have launches, and we've watched those concepts and talk and listen to your ideas, and I think there's some merit to doing some viewing. Certainly there are going to be lots of launches in the future, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we want to keep people knowledge. It's not just the shuttle launches, but we're having whether it be commercial launches or they're going to be unmanned launches. NASA's puts a lot of things in space between there and Canaveral, and we want people to showcase and see those.
Yeah, and I think it's really neat the way that NASA's allowed you and worked with you to not only make it the NASA launches, but even when there's a commercial launch or a military launch, you're still able to use your facilities and get people out there and exposed to that. I think that's really smart to do as well.
NASA's a wonderful partner. In spite of all the sort of, tough days and headlines and whatnot, I think they're great to work with. They're a great group of people. Senator Director Bob Cabana has just been a wonderful person, and all of his team there that guide the place every day have been really good. And, we'll work all these challenges out this summer with Congress. I'm fairly confident we'll come out with a great plan, and Delaware North is pleased to be there to partner with NASA in the future.
Great, Bill. Well, thanks. And as you get ready to do more announcements and plans, we'll have you back on and talk about them, get people excited about what you're doing. So thanks.
I'd love to do that, Jim. Thank you very much.
You bet. Congratulations again. Good luck. We'll say goodbye to Bill and tell you that in our remaining moments, next week, we're going to have Frank DiBello from Space Florida back on for the third time on Space Talk. He must be the guest favorite. Mark Nappy, who's the top guy in Florida for United Space Alliance, will be joining us wearing his hat as chairman of the Space Day Committee. Space Day is March 2nd, and that's what we're talking about is space issues in the state of Florida. All the changes at NASA, I think there's a greater emphasis on commercial space, research opportunities. There's some threats to our state. There's some opportunities for our state. And we're going to talk about those state space issues as our community goes up there and lobbies Congress, the legislature in Florida on March 2nd. In the meantime, stay in touch with us, WMMB.com, keyword Space Talk. Space Talk is brought to you by United Space Alliance. I'm Jim Banky. And even though football season is over, remind you that it doesn't matter who wins or loses, as long as the food is served hot and the drinks are served cold. You are listening to WMMB.